Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Friday episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast. And rejoice, Pistons fans, the seven-game losing streak is over. This is your host, Matt Shook. And you can follow me on Twitter at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, and another underscore after that. Also follow the Locked On Pistons Twitter feed as well. I figured I'd give you guys a quick little bio because I know you've been listening for the last couple months and probably don't know all that much about me. I've been a full-time newspaper sports writer guy for about 12 years or so since graduating from Central Michigan University. I grew up in Royal Oak, was at the Port Huron, Michigan Times Herald for a few years after college, and then moved down to the Ozarks in Southwest Missouri, where I was a sports writer, preps editor in Springfield, Missouri for the News Leader down there. Moved down to the Caribbean for 3 years to cover sports as the sports editor at the Virgin Islands Daily News, Tim Duncan's hometown, where I covered the Olympics last summer in Rio de Janeiro for the Team ISV, the USVI. I also moved to Chicago last year, where I've been covering the White Sox and Cubs and Bulls for the Associated Press, also writing for other websites as well. I've got another day job, too, where I pay the bills for as well. But I picked up the Locked On Pistons podcast going into this year, and for the first time, I'm covering a team that I've kind of rooted for my whole life. So it's kind of a mix, as you've probably noticed. The podcast is kind of a mix of a journalism and fan kind of thing, which is where I think things are going with this whole industry anyway. But tonight, or today, I tape this late at night, so you can catch me sometimes saying the wrong days like I did, I believe, in yesterday's podcast. But this is the Friday podcast, and I'm taping it late on Thursday night after the Pistons picked up the win against the Atlanta Hawks. We're going to break down that game a little bit, and I'm going to talk about the lineup wrinkle that I was most interested in and also discuss my thoughts on Reggie Bullock, the starter. That is not the lineup wrinkle that I was most interested in, by the way. And then we're going to talk about the Indiana Pacers, who the Pistons have to get off the plane in a couple hours here as I tape this and get ready to face the Red Hot Pacers on Friday night as the second part of a back-to-back. But you know by now, if you listen to here, I've been peddling the Draft.com draft app that you should get on and join us for daily fantasy basketball contests. You can also set up your account and get on fantasy football contests as well. Use promo code LOPISTONS, all caps, and we'll add to whatever you load up to your account $3 free that will get you, that's enough to get you into the weekly Draft Wednesday contest that we do every Wednesday. I got a new listener, M.R. Ixtad. He joined up last week and won his first contest, so he's got a bunch of more money in his account as well. He picked up Giannis in the draft and also Donovan Mitchell of the bizarro world Detroit Pistons. If the Pistons would have picked him in the first round instead of Luke Kennard, maybe we would have a different team right now, for better or for worse, probably for better, if you've been following Donovan and what he's been able to do for the Utah Jazz, especially of these last couple weeks. But he joined and got a lot. M.R. Rickstad, not Donovan Mitchell. I don't think he's on the draft app. But you can draft Donovan Mitchell every week in our weekly contest. Follow me on the app at Matt Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, and I will invite you into our exclusive listener contest, where it's been a great partnership for the Lockdown Network, and this is a free podcast for you. So do me a favor, sign up for that, throw a little money in your account, and we will reap the benefits as well as you, because it's a fun app and you'll enjoy it. But the Pistons got the win, 105-91. By the way, I watched the feed from the Atlanta Hawks broadcast. Sometimes I like to do that. I love George and Special K, or maybe if Matt Shepard or Mark Champion is doing the broadcast. But I love the Pistons, Fox Sports Detroit, Johnny Kane on the sidelines as well. But I had Bob Rathbun and Dominique Wilkins doing the broadcast. Now, of course, you know who Dominique Wilkins is, the human highlight film. But Bob Rathbun, Detroit sports fans would remember him. He does the TV for the Atlanta Hawks. But Rathbun replaced Ernie Harwell in 1992 on the radio broadcast for the Detroit Tigers when Bo Schembechler fired him in an inexplicable move back then. Bob Rathbun and Rick Riz were the broadcasters back then. I can remember that. I wonder if Rathbun just kind of finds the worst teams in pro sports and takes over from legends and kind of has forgettable eras. But he was doing the game. Neek and Bob Rathbun were pretty, they had a Pistons team coming in on a seven-game losing streak. They're covering the worst team in the NBA. They came in at 6-21, those Hawks, and they were probably looking for material and teams to make fun of, and they kind of did. They were especially when the Hawks were competitive in the first quarter on Thursday night. They were kind of giving it to the Pistons a little bit. But I don't know that this win tells us a whole lot about the Pistons. It's great to snap that losing streak. There is no doubt about that. But beating the hapless Hawks, not a lot to take from it other than, like I said, moving on from that losing streak and trying to put it in the back door. But Neek, he obviously didn't do a whole lot of research on the Detroit Pistons. And I know that that's, you know, he's kind of riding off into the sunset. He's living off of his great playing career as a broadcaster, maybe not putting in the work as far as scouting the visiting teams, but you'd like to think that there would be some PAs or something like that that would feed him some information, because he kept talking in the first quarter about how is Andre Drummond so far away from the basket? What are the Pistons doing? How can they get their offense going when he's on the elbow, when he's in the high post? He must have not been paying attention to the fact that that's what the Pistons have been doing all season. If you've even get on the Google a little bit, you'll find out that that's what the Pistons have been doing. But again, he just kind of harped on that over and over. And they ripped on the Pistons' defense a little bit. He said, play with patience and you'll get whatever you want against the Pistons. And that's not the Detroit Pistons organization that I know, and not the team that we saw in the first 20 games. But the team did look pretty good at times. Got the win. But from the Atlanta side, John Collins, as I incorrectly reported yesterday's podcast, that he wouldn't play. He actually did play, came back after missing a bunch of games with a shoulder injury and played really well. He came off the bench, got 15 points in 20 minutes. Again, that's really the only reason to watch the Atlanta Hawks right now. Really their only very interesting player, as he's a rookie from Wake Forest. I'm really high on him, and I like what he's been able to add to Atlanta this year. So a little bit of hope in the rebuild right now for the Hawks. Ersan Ilyasova, our old friend for the Pistons, he looked like Dirk early. He was knocking down shots from the baseline, three-pointers. He scored 23 points against his former Detroit Pistons teammates, and they were really high on him on the broadcast. The other thing that I don't know if you caught this from watching the Pistons broadcast, but Jeezy performed at halftime, the Southern rapper. Now, I'm old. I used to listen to rap music a lot when I was in middle school and also in high school as well. Big Tupac guy, big Biggie guy from the past and whatnot. But I didn't know until doing a little Wikipedia and Googling tonight that Jeezy is actually the same person as Young Jeezy. Young Jeezy was Young Jeezy before, and then at some point, I don't know if he was like adolescent Jeezy for a while or whatever, but he became Jeezy. And I thought they were two totally different people, which kind of threw me off when I was thinking about rap and hearing people talk about rap. But Jeezy, Young Jeezy, same guy. Now, I know that I like Kanye, and he's Yeezy, so I know that that confuses people as well. And I've always kind of been a Kanye guy, not the person, but I've been a fan of his music. So anyway, I know that this makes me sound like the oldest person alive, but I'm guessing that there are some old rap fans or maybe people in my same mid-30s demo that I just want to do a public service and let you know that Jeezy and Young Jeezy are the same person. So at some point there was a transformation. So it's not like you have to learn about two different rappers. It's actually the same person. But along those lines, talking about growing up or maybe different stages in life, Neek and Bob Rathman were talking about how the Pistons early on looked like a totally different team from the last time that these teams played a couple weeks ago at Little Caesars Arena. They said that they did a 180 from last time and that they have bad body language and they didn't look like they wanted to play with each other. Well, there's certainly some cases to be made about that sometimes, but the Pistons cleaned it up enough to get the win against, like I said, the worst team in the NBA, kind of by a lot right now. They've just been struggling mightily. I was getting texts from friends during the game saying, how did the Atlanta Hawks even get 6 wins? I mean, this team is just putrid. Andre Drummond, 12 points, 19 rebounds, 8 assists, close to a triple-double on the night, 2 steals and 2 blocks as well. And even though Dominique Wilkins says that he should get down in the paint like maybe Kevin Willis did back on his old Atlanta Hawks teams or Hakeem Olajuwon did, well, that's not really wasn't working for Andre Drummond in his first several years in the NBA. So they've got him on the high post, throwing passes, making cuts for guys like Reggie Bullock and Avery Bradley and others, and Tobias Harris with a nice cut and dunk in the third quarter as well. So there was a lot of Andre Drummond showing his skills from the high post. So that was a part of the early season trends that were going in the right direction for the Pistons that repeated themselves again on Thursday night. 19 points for Tobias Harris, speaking of positive early season trends. And speaking of positive early season trends again, 18 for Avery Bradley. And like I said in the podcast on Thursday, how Avery Bradley's offense goes, the Pistons go as well, and they got the win. And again, going back to the well of guys who played really well early in the season, 17 points from Langston Galloway off the bench. He's had two of his strongest games of the season in the last two games. Even that loss against Denver, he was kind of one of the only bright spots, along with Boban, who did not get off the bench on Thursday, and a move that kind of surprised me. Although Eric Moreland was great, although he didn't score, kind of a typical Eric Moreland plus performance. No points, but 11 rebounds, kind of a throwback of those first few weeks of the season. But like my guy Jozak from Spain said on Twitter after the game, this win should elevate the confidence. I was kind of making a joke and said that, hey, the Pistons beat the Hawks, they're back. And obviously that's not the case. You can't beat the worst team in the NBA and feel like that you are completely back. But getting rid of that seven game losing streak, maybe that gets the confidence back in the right spot. And some of these guys on the Pistons, and all NBA players, and all athletes, and basically all people, really, it has a lot to do with your mental state and where you are as far as confidence. Even though that these are world-class athletes, they struggle with it sometimes. I think guys like Reggie Jackson and Andre Drummond are very emotional guys, and I think that getting things going in the right direction, even if it's a win against the Hawks, should help the Pistons, especially this team, and just to kind of get things going in a positive direction again. That will be a good thing. But I want to break it down even further and talk about the we talk so much on NBA and on Pistons Twitter and online about the lineups and the ratings of this lineup and the rating of this lineup. But I saw a lineup wrinkle that I want to talk about a little bit that I was talking about on Thursday's podcast, and we saw it basically for the first time in the season on Thursday night, and I wanted to talk about that and give a little bit of thoughts on Reggie Bullock in the starting lineup as well. But if your company is interested in men between the ages of 18 and 44, then your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked on Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if you want men and that key demographic of 18 to 44, then this is your spot. Plus, our rates are reasonable. So email me at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
So I didn't watch Thursday night's Pistons game against the Atlanta Hawks live. I actually watched it after it was over tonight and read a couple articles and kind of went through the game log a little bit to find out what might be the most interesting part of the game, and saw that the Hawks had the 1-point lead after the first quarter and that the Pistons kind of gained control early on in the second quarter, and it looked like they rolled through the victory, and that's what happened when you watch the film as well. So I was interested to see kind of what happened early in that second quarter, and it turns out that that was when the Pistons put in a new lineup that probably they haven't played with at all this year. Stanley Johnson is out of the starting lineup right now with Reggie Bullock in there. So he entered the game in the second quarter, first thing at the beginning of the second quarter. He was with Luke Kennard, Eric Moreland, Anthony Tolliver, and Langston Galloway. Now, what's interesting about that lineup? There's no traditional point guard. You don't have Reggie Jackson out there, and you don't have Ish Smith out there as well. Ish Smith had the three fouls in the first quarter, so that was probably part of it. But it's something that I talked about a little bit on Thursday's podcast, is that we haven't really seen Langston Galloway as the point guard, as the pretty much primary ball handler much throughout the season at all. I went through the minutes of Reggie and Ish. I was like, I can't really even think of a time when Reggie or Ish wasn't on the court. It's pretty much been one or the other on the court pretty much all the season. And I went through all the minutes, and lo and behold, that you pretty much add up Reggie and Ish's minutes every game, and they've got 48 minutes, except for the Phoenix game where the Pistons blew out the Suns, and it really didn't matter for parts of it. There were 5 minutes where neither of them were on the court. And then the Cleveland game when they got blown out of the gym there was about 7 minutes where neither of them were on the court. So this was pretty much the first time that Langston Galloway's had the ball in his hands as a primary setup guy for this offense, and it worked out really well. He was able, I mean, again, this is the Atlanta Hawks. This is the worst team in the NBA. That you talk about their first line, their starters are pretty bad, but their second unit is like a special kind of suck. Like, there is no talent out there right now. They pretty much lost Langston Galloway three times down the court, and one of those times was him just dribbling the ball down the court. John Collins had a really nice dunk that Dominique Wilkins was going crazy about, and lost in the hoopla. Langston Galloway dribbles the ball down the court, no one picks him up, and he throws up the easiest three-pointer he's had in his entire career and knocks it down. So while the Phillips Arena crowd is what little of it there was, and I know as a Detroit fan it's a little strange to be ripping on another team for not having anyone at the game, but it was the case, again, with Atlanta, as you would expect for a team that comes in with a 6-21 record. But you know, it was effective. I mean, Langston Galloway, as far as demonstrating what he needs to demonstrate to get some minutes for after going through a lull of not seeing the court at all in this past few games, he's done that in these last couple. So I think Langston Galloway should and will be back in the rotation. But I think it's going to be interesting to see whether he takes over as the primary ball handler sometimes, because I think that without Reggie and Ish in there, what does that help? That helps your defense. When you have, then you can afford to maybe have Luke Kennard out there as the guy who's not that strong defensively. Can you have Luke Kennard and Reggie or Ish in the same backcourt? That might be a problem. So if you have Galloway out there as your primary ball handler instead, throw a guy like Stanley Johnson or maybe Reggie Bullock out there with him, put Tolliver, who I think is more of a bench guy than a starter, I think that that might be a second unit that might be something to look out for. Now, that takes minutes away from Ish, who has been great in his year plus for the Pistons, and Reggie Jackson's kind of, in some ways, a part of the heart and soul of this team, so you really don't want to limit his minutes too much. But it's an interesting lineup that Stan threw out there. Langston Galloway is the primary ball handler, who's a pretty good defender himself, better certainly than Reggie Jackson and Ish Smith on the defensive side. So you can get Luke Kennard more minutes out there. You can try to hide him against the other team's worst perimeter offensive player, and you're able to use Eric Moreland to the best of his capabilities. Maybe Boban could even fit in with that lineup a little bit, as long as Anthony Tolliver's out there playing the strong defense that you would expect from him. So that was kind of, and like I said, they went into the second quarter with a one-point deficit, and when those guys left the game, it was 41-35. So it was a seven-point swing, 11-4, and a little bit over 5 minutes and 30 seconds. So an interesting thing to keep an eye on, and I know that Van Gundy might have been pushed into that lineup a little bit out of necessity with Ish Smith's fouls early on in the game. Although with such a, you know, a bench guy, I don't think that the foul situation for a guy like Ish Smith should really change your plans as far as how much you're going to play him. But it was just interesting to see. Along these same lines, is Stanley Johnson out of the starting lineup right now. I feel like this is kind of a discipline move, trying to maybe Stan Van Gundy trying to do whatever psychological things he needs to do as coach to try to get his 21-year-old forward back on the right path. And maybe there is some health issues lingering with Stanley Johnson as well. Duncan Smith of The Athletic, who's a friend of the pod and was on last week, he had a nice article on Stanley Johnson on theathletic.com that you should check out there as well. So just some thoughts on Reggie Bullock in the starting lineup, and Duncan, who tweets a lot, and if you're on Twitter, you should definitely be following. He was kind of railing, and part of the article was how he disagrees with Stan Van Gundy having Bullock as the starter, and he feels like between Johnson and Anthony Tolliver and Luke Kennard and Reggie Bullock, that Bullock is actually the fourth best choice for all those players as far as getting the start. Now, I think that when you're looking at who should start over Stanley Johnson, if you're going to go that route as far as getting him on the bench for whatever reason right now. And by the way, I think that Stanley Johnson should be the fifth starter for the Pistons. I just think that he's the best of a bad crop of small forwards that this team has right now. But the reason that I think that Stan Van Gundy is going with Bullock is not because he thinks that Bullock complements the other four guys. I just think that Bullock is pretty much a placeholder for Stanley Johnson right now. Whatever kind of psychological coaching that Stan Van Gundy's doing is probably a temporary thing, and he wants to shake up Stanley Johnson without shaking up the starters and the way they play as much as possible. So you put the guy out there that plays defense and isn't much of an offensive option. He's kind of like Stanley Johnson light in those ways. So you just throw him out there for those few minutes at the beginning of the game and just kind of get the starters still on that same path where they're, this is the guy we're going to kind of stick in the corner. This is the guy who's not really the offensive player of our group. And not put Luke Kennard out there and try to change the way they play in the first quarter or in crunch time. And not put Anthony Tolliver out there either, because like I said, I feel like he's been a bench contributor throughout his career. And maybe there are times that you are going to start Anthony Tolliver or play him in crunch time if he's playing well or if the matchups lend itself like against San Antonio the other night. But I don't think that they're Stan Van Gundy's like, hey, we're going to put the fifth starter out there that's going to maximize our ability to play well in the first quarter. I think it's more of a thing where I don't want to shake up what I've got. I know that Stanley Johnson, if our team's going to be any good later in the season and into the playoffs, Stanley Johnson is going to have to be a key contributor. So whatever I'm doing right now in December has to be guiding toward that finish line. And while I want to do something with Stanley and I want to connect with him as a player, I don't want to mess up the other guys in the starting lineup and get them to thinking that they need to change the way they play by Luke Kennard being out there, or maybe change Anthony Tolliver's mindset. I know what Anthony Tolliver is. He's a guy who's going to play 15 to 20 minutes. Hopefully he's going to knock down some threes. He's going to be kind of a leadership presence. He's going to come off the bench and he's going to give us energy. And I don't want to mess up that either. So those are the things that I think are going through Stan Van Gundy's head. And I think that, I agree with it. I think that it's the right move right now, as long as Stanley Johnson turns things around and eventually gets back into that starting lineup. But we will see if that happens anytime soon, and we'll see what kind of growth Stanley Johnson has coming off the bench. And maybe we'll see that again on Friday night as the Pistons go into Indiana to take on the Red Hot Pacers, which we will talk about next. The Indiana Pacers are 16-12, and by the way, after the Pistons win on Thursday night, they are now tied with the Washington Wizards and New York Knicks in a three-way tie for the sixth spot in the Eastern Conference at 15-13, a half game ahead of the Philadelphia 76ers, who, if the playoffs started today, that famous sports cliche, the Sixers would be outside of the Eastern Conference playoffs looking in, while Washington would be sixth, Detroit would be seventh, and the New York Knicks would be eighth. Now, who is in the playoffs that would get kicked out? Because I do believe that the Philadelphia 76ers are going to end up in the playoffs. And the Miami Heat, who are outside of the playoffs in the 10th slot right now, I believe that, I don't know that they'll get in, but I think that they're going to have something to say about it before the year is over as well. So who comes out if the 76ers get in and the Heat also might be knocking on the door? Well, I think it's the Indiana Pacers, who the Pistons will play on Friday night. And I know that they had a four-game winning streak before it was snapped on Wednesday night against former franchise player Paul George, who is now with the Oklahoma City Thunder, as you know by now. The Pacers are a game ahead of that three-team logjam of Washington, Detroit, and New York with the fifth slot right now, actually tied, are pretty much in a virtual tie with the Milwaukee Bucks in that fourth and fifth slot as well. It's interesting to see how this whole thing is shaking down. But there was an interesting read as well on the ringer.com. Kevin O'Connor talked about Victor Oladipo, who was traded for Paul George as part of that package that went down or back up to Indiana for Paul George. He's having a great season. He had 47 points the other night against the Denver Nuggets, as the Pacers took care of Denver in overtime, something that the Pistons couldn't do a couple of nights later. But Oladipo is now getting 24.3 points per game, almost 10 points per game better than a year ago. And what's the secret? Well, he had 47 the other night against Denver, but it's pretty much that he's working out and eating right. How novel. It's the thing that we all should be doing, isn't it? And it turns out that Oladipo lately has been eating things that are pretty much only natural, even meat. It was quoted in the article as saying, if it didn't swim, crawl, run, or grow, then you can't eat it. So take out all the carbs and the processed foods and Oladipo. You can see it just in his face from watching him play this year that he's a whole different body type, a whole different player. He's leaner, he's more trim, and he's a stronger player, quicker on the court as well. And he's turning into, you know, that next level of player. He's in part because the Eastern Conference is so weak and bereft of superstars, he might even find his way onto the All-Star team so far this year. But you know, maybe it's lingering effects from the Ron Artest, Jermaine O'Neal brawl days or whatever, but I, you know, the Indiana Pacers, they leave a bad taste in my mouth, and I just, if anything, I'm biased against them, and I think they're going to take a little bit of a tailspin come second half of the season, and they're going to find themselves out of the playoff picture. I just think that Oladipo, he's got a lot to prove, and he went out and had a great summer, and he's having a great first half of the season. There is absolutely no doubt about that. But as far as overall talent of this team, and Thad Young is playing really well lately. You got to hand it to that veteran forward for the way that he's playing in these recent days. But Thad Young has never been part of a great team that goes to the playoffs and is a contender or anything like that. Now, if you want to talk about Miles Turner, and I like Miles Turner, I think he's a very good player, and he's probably going to be an all-star someday, if not very, very soon. If you think that Miles Turner is going to make a great leap and become the superstar that he's possibly destined to be this year, then maybe I can understand why you think the Pacers will maintain at their current level of play and stay in the playoff hunt. However, I just think when you look up and down that lineup, Bogdanovich isn't a two-way type of player that's going to cause a lot of problems for teams in the second half of the season. Corey Joseph was a nice pickup for them, but I don't think he's the type of point guard that's going to take you to the playoffs or take you to the second round or anything like that. And I know that there are fans of the Pacers and fans of other teams that think the same thing of Reggie Jackson, and for a lot of good reason sometimes. But I just don't see the overall talent level of the Indiana Pacers being that of a team that's going to be able to withstand the entire season in, by the way, which is now a pretty good Eastern Conference. Darren Collison's a veteran point guard right now, but I don't think he's the type of player that's going to be a difference maker come late in the season. And TJ Leaf is a nice little rookie for them, but I don't think he's ready to be the impact kind of player. And if you're counting on Lance Stephenson having the same type of games that he did in that home game earlier this season when the Pacers knocked off the Pistons night in and night out, then I don't think you've been paying attention to Lance Stephenson's career these past few years. But again, I'm banking on Miles Turner not becoming the superstar that he might be someday quite yet. And I don't think the Victor Oladipo's second half of the season will be nearly as good as the first half of the season that he's had. So, but again, this is a really interesting game that the Pistons and Pacers have coming on Friday night. It might tell a lot about where these teams are at. And keep in mind that these teams are going to play again in another week. So two matchups with the Pacers coming up very soon. A team that's a nice measuring stick for the Pistons, especially as the teams are pretty much parallel in a lot of ways and are close in the standings and division rivals and a lot of history there as well. But draft.com, the draft app, join us on there next week. Use promo code LOPISTONS as well. The Pistons got another game on Sunday at home against the Orlando Magic. So I'm interested to see, as we tape the podcast on Sunday night next week, where this team's going to be at and what kind of mood the fan base is going to be in going into Monday morning, as the Pistons are in an interesting spot, having broken the 7-game losing streak, but still uncertain as the future comes into now with the Indiana Pacers on Friday night, the Orlando Magic on Sunday night. We'll see what happens this weekend, but thanks for joining us here on Locked On Pistons. This is your host, Matt Shook, and have a good one, everyone.